Welcome to NASA's Planet Quest podcast, episode 6. I'm Dr. Joe Patesky. Since 1995, when the first planet was discovered orbiting a star other than the Sun, almost 200 new planets have been found. This onslaught of discoveries has rewritten astronomy textbooks and toppled some long-standing theories of planet formation. It's also led to a renaissance of interest in one of science's oldest and most basic questions: are we alone? The possible answer to that question lies with a new fleet of space-borne telescopes specifically designed to search for planets like Earth and the chemical traces of life. Here today to talk about that ambitious program is Wesley Traub, Chief Scientist for NASA's Navigator Program. Dr. Traub, welcome.
Thank you.
What are NASA's planet-finding goals over the next decade?
Well, NASA's been in the planet-finding business for a long time, and as far back as I can look and find papers back in the 50s and the 60s, they've been actually thinking about looking for planets. So this is not something new. So the plan for NASA for the coming decade is basically to follow up on all of these discoveries of almost 200 planets that you mentioned that we know about today. The main thing we'd like to know is, are there any other planets out there that look like the Earth? The focus of NASA's program for the coming decade basically is to find planets, find how frequently Earths are found around stars nearby, find which stars have Earth-like planets, or if they don't have them, which one, why not? And then to actually look and see if we can measure an Earth-like planet around a star and determine if it really is Earth-like.
Let's talk about some specific missions. How would something like the SimPlanetQuest mission be unique or do something different in terms of trying to locate some of these planets?
Okay, good. Well, the purpose of SimPlanetQuest is to look for all sizes of planets around nearby stars. So that's a key thing. It looks for many different sizes, and that range of sizes goes all the way out to these heavy Jupiters, all the way down to a single Earth. And it has the capability of finding Earth mass planets, as I said before. And it will do it around nearby stars. Nearby stars are of interest because we can see them. They're our neighbors. And more importantly, we can follow up with later missions that would actually focus on these stars with a telescope of some sort, which are planned later missions, and isolate the light of the star, the really bright light of the star, from the very faint light of the planet, so we can characterize the planet and see whether or not there's life on it, that sort of thing.
So what happens in the future after SimPlanetQuest? How does SIM set the stage for possible more advanced planet finders in the future?
Right. Well, SIM will tell us whether there are Earth-like planets around the nearby stars, and that'll be a big, big step. It'll also tell us, well, let me take that back about Earth-like. It'll tell us whether there are Earth mass planets around nearby stars, and it will also tell us what orbit they're in. In other words, how close to the star or how far away they are. So it tells us these two things, which are really very crucial things: the mass of the planet and where it's located with respect to its star, how far away it is. If we know the mass and we have a mass that's somewhere in the neighborhood of one Earth mass, then we know that, well, we've got a candidate here. And the other thing SIM will do, as I said, is to tell you how far away it is from the star. And this is crucial. If the planet is too close to the star, it'll just feel the heat of the star and it'll be hot. If it's too far away, it'll feel not much heat and it'll be cold. So in between, there is this region called the habitable zone, where it's sort of like conditions that we would recognize on Earth. In our solar system, this habitable zone goes all the way from the orbit of Venus, which is about 70% as far from the Sun as we are, to Mars, which is about half again as far from the Sun as we are. So there's a fairly wide range there where people think that you can have a habitable condition. And by a habitable condition, people mean water. So SIM will tell us whether or not this planet is in the right range, the habitable zone, from a star to have liquid water on its surface. And as we said before, if you want to look for a place that's sort of Earth-like, it would be very good if you had water.
So SIM is going to, in a sense, act as a precursor and look for planets where we could then narrow in and try to find something that might be, quote-unquote, Earth-like.
Absolutely, right. If SIM finds these things, then we will have a list of targets. We'll know exactly where to look. We'll know when to look with succeeding missions, which maybe we should talk about a little bit. There are two missions that are planned after SIM. One is called Terrestrial Planet Finder Coronagraph, and the other one is called Terrestrial Planet Finder Interferometer. The main thing that these two missions will do is to not only search for the planets that are there and check and see whether SIM was able to give us the right information and look for the ones that SIM couldn't find because they were too small, but it will be able to characterize the planet. It'll tell us whether or not the light that comes from that planet is similar to the light that comes from Earth, or whether it's more like the light from Jupiter or whatever. And you can tell what the basic planet is really like at heart.
So how did you get started in this field? What's your background?
Oh, my background is, well, actually, basically, I'm interested in looking at spectra of things. I like the idea of learning about an object by not actually touching it, by being back a mile, 100 miles, 93 million miles, to quote the sun. And I just think it's fascinating. I have always thought this, that, and I don't know why really, that it's interesting that you can tell all about an object by just looking at its colors, its spectrum, and you can sit here quietly in your laboratory or whatever, and anybody can do this, anybody with a telescope or even with your eyes, and you can learn something about these objects that are distant, far away.
When did this start? Was this an interest that started when you were a child, or was there something somebody said, a book you read, a TV show? What sparked it all?
I mean, I remember as a child, I was 12 years old or something like that. I made up, fiber optics were new at the time, and so I made up this letter that said, now in retrospect, I think that I must have been completely seen through, but I made up this letterhead as if I was a company, and I wrote off for a free sample of some fiber optic thing, and lo and behold, they actually sent it to me in the mail, and the people at the other end were probably giggling when they sent it, and they said, we know what he's doing, but I thought I was fooling somebody. It was great.
It must strike you every once in a while that you have a really interesting job. Looking for life on other planets, coming up with missions to find planets, something that we couldn't have envisioned a decade ago as being a job that you actually could be hired to do.
You're right. This is actually the most exciting thing that I could think of to do. Actually, when I came here to JPL a year ago, people said, why are you moving? I mean, I moved from Boston. My family is still there. My house is still there. I'm here. It's the most exciting thing I could think to do if I had three lifetimes. This is really a great opportunity. There is going to be no other point in history when we are out at the point where we can discover an Earth-like planet and tell whether or not there's life on it. This will never happen again.
Dr. Traub, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us.
You're entirely welcome.
For NASA's Planet Quest, I'm Dr. Joe Pitesky.
For more about NASA's search for new worlds, visit NASA's Planet Quest on the World Wide Web at planetquest.jpl.nasa.gov.